Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going for a bit of an intellectual shortcut.
A shortcut into strategic planning, you could say.
Exactly. We are diving deep into a cornerstone of project scheduling, the legendary Gantt chart.
Legendary is a good word for it. It's everywhere.
It is. And our sources for this, they don't just tell us what it is. They give us a full systematic construction manual. And maybe more importantly, a really critical look at its usefulness.
Right. Where it works and where it falls apart.
So the mission today is pretty simple. We want to get a complete systemic understanding of how this visual tool works, why it provides so much clarity, and where its blind spots are.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to just, give you the one sentence takeaway right now, it's this. A Gantt chart is a tool that maps tasks visually against a calendar, and it turns a complex interwoven workflow into a simple roadmap. The goal is always optimal efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the basic problem this chart is even trying to solve.
Well, the core problem is constraint. And I mean, chaos. Every project is just this chaotic mess of activities that all depend on each other.
Right.
The Gantt chart's real value is that it just takes that chaos and forces it into a simple structured format. And it does that by focusing on just two things, duration and dependency.
How long and in what order?
That's it. And what's really fascinating is how it handles the timeline. You mentioned the goal is finding the minimum time for completion.
Yeah, the ideal path, the critical path, they call it.
Exactly. But the chart also, it helps you see the maximum timeline. That's what you'd get if every single task ran one after the other, end to end.
Which would be incredibly inefficient.
Totally inefficient. So the magic of the Gantt chart is that it visually shows you the space between those two extremes. It helps you find all the overlaps so you can optimize your workflow and get closer to that minimum time.
That's a crucial distinction. So you're not just tracking time, you're tracking the efficiency margin, really. Okay, let's dig into the anatomy of the chart itself. How does it achieve that visual clarity?
It's all about the visual language. It's very simple, really. You have your tasks, the what on the vertical axis.
The simplest.
The simple list. And then time, the when, is on the horizontal axis. Each task gets a bar. The beginning of the bar is your start date. The end is the finish date. And, well, the length of the bar is how long it takes.
And that simplicity, that visual clarity, that's what makes it so powerful in a business setting, I'd imagine.
Oh, absolutely.
It helps with planning, coordination, monitoring.
Yeah.
A manager doesn't need to read a dense spreadsheet. They just look at the bars.
And they can see it instantly. Mm-hmm. Is a task late? Are things overlapping like they should? And, maybe most importantly, who is waiting on whom?
Right. That dependency?
Precisely. And that transparency makes it just a phenomenal communication tool.
I can see that. Everyone's on the same page.
Everyone. From the CEO down to the person actually doing the task. Everyone is looking at the exact same plan. It manages expectations, it helps you talk about resources, and it makes presentations and meetings incredibly clear. It turns these abstract ideas into physical space on a timeline.
And it's not always just the bars, right? I've seen them with other little symbols like diamonds or something.
Right, milestones. Those are key. A milestone is it's a zero duration event. Something with high impact.
Like a final sign-off received or beta product launched.
Exactly. They act as these crucial checkpoints along the way. And, a lot of the more sophisticated charts use color coding. Green for on track, red for delayed.
Or they shade in the bar to show how much is done, like a progress bar.
Yep, percentage completion. So this simple visual language means the chart isn't just planning the work. It's tracking it in something close to real time. If we connect this back to that bigger picture, its ability to map those overlaps, that's the whole key to minimizing the total time.
You're visually proving you can do task A and task B at the same time.
And by doing that, you just saved yourself the entire duration of task B.
That leads us perfectly into actually building one. Because if you get this wrong, all that efficiency is just theoretical.
It's worse than useless, yeah.
So for anyone listening, there is a clear 6-step manual for this that ensures you don't miss those critical dependencies. This is the how-to part.
The practical bit.
And step one always seems almost too simple. Write a title.
It sounds like a sanity check, doesn't it?
It does. But the key part is it has to include the time scale.
Yeah.
Days, weeks, months.
You have to define your unit of time. If you don't, the whole chart is immediately confusing. Useless, really.
And defining that time unit leads right into step two, which is calculating the total project duration.
And this is deceptively complex. A lot of people just add up the duration of every single task.
assuming they all happen one after another.
Right, which gives you that maximum timeline we talked about, the yeah. really inefficient one.
But the whole trick is running tasks at the same time. How do you actually calculate for that?
You have to find that critical path, which means accounting for those overlapping tasks. Let's use an example, building a website.
Okay.
You might have a task, write all copy, that takes, say, 10 days. And another task, design site framework, that takes 8 days.
And those can happen at the same time.
Exactly. The copywriter doesn't need to wait for the designer. So the total time for those two tasks isn't 18 days. It's just the length of the longest task.
So 10 days.
10 days. Step two needs that kind of meticulous attention to find the true optimized duration.
Okay, so once you have that real optimized duration, you get to step three, draw the time scale.
Mm-hmm. And it has to be perfectly evenly spaced. It runs from your start date day one all the way to that optimized duration you just calculated.
You're setting the boundaries of the whole project.
You're drawing the field of play. And with the boundaries set, we can move to step four. Insert the tasks that have no preceding activities.
The ones that can start immediately.
The foundational tasks. They have no dependencies. In our website example, maybe that's secure domain name or initial client meeting.
Right.
Starting with those anchors the entire chart in reality. It establishes the groundwork for everything that comes after.
Which brings us to step five, which sounds like the most difficult part.
This is the meticulous part, for sure. This is where you insert the remaining tasks.
According to their dependency.
According to their specific completion order. And crucially, the task bar for a new activity can only begin after the bar for its preceding task ends.
So if develop homepage code depends on design site framework,
the coding bar cannot start until that design bar is completely finished. That visual link, that's the primary function of the whole chart.
It makes perfect sense. If you mess up the dependencies in step five, the whole schedule just, it falls apart. It's like trying to bake a cake without mixing the batter first.
That's a great analogy. Chronological accuracy here is absolutely non-negotiable.
And then we get to the end. Step six.
Step six. Determine the earliest finishing time. Once everything is plotted correctly, you just look at the chart. The end of the very last task bar.
That's your finish line.
That's your finish line. It represents the minimum possible duration for the project, assuming no delays, and that's the number that stakeholders always care about.
Okay, so that gives us the definitive manual. We know what it is. We know how to build one perfectly. But here's where it gets really interesting. Is the Gantt chart always the right tool for the job? What are the big pros and cons here?
Well, the advantages are clear. And they are very powerful, especially for projects with predictable linear steps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like construction or manufacturing.
Right, things you've done before.
Exactly. The first big advantage is just its power for clear visualization and tracking. It turns a boring list into a dynamic map. It becomes trivially easy to compare your plan against your actual progress.
You can just see it. That bar is supposed to be halfway shaded by Friday, and it's not.
And if it's not, you know you need to take corrective action now, not find out in 2 weeks.
And the second big advantage, that comes back to those dependencies you mapped out.
It does. It's the quick identification of delays, the domino effect.
You can predict failure almost.
You can.
Right.
Because the chart shows the whole chain, a manager can instantly see how a delay in task A is going to slam into task B, and then C and D and your final deadline.
So you can be proactive.
You can adjust schedules, shift resources to the problem area. You're not just reacting in a panic weeks later when it's too late.
But okay, let's talk about the flip side. The disadvantages. I've seen some of these for big projects, and they just look like a spaghetti monster.
That is the first major limitation. They can become overly complex for large projects. If you have hundreds of tasks, that chart just turns into a wall of lines and bars.
And that clutter completely defeats the purpose. The visual clarity is gone.
It's gone. And then we get to, I think, its biggest conceptual blind spot. Disadvantage two.
Which is?
The chart does not indicate task complexity or resources. The bar only shows one thing, duration, how long it takes.
And that's a huge problem.
It can be so misleading for management. You could have two bars that are both, say, 5 days long. One might be send final email, super low effort.
Takes 2 minutes.
Right. The other might be integrate three complex software systems. A massive effort, needs a specialized, expensive team. But on the Gantt chart, they look identical. It completely ignores the difficulty, the skill, the cost.
And that leads to another practical issue, right? Disadvantage three is that these things need constant babysitting.
They require frequent updating. Projects are, they're alive, they're dynamic. Priorities shift, people get sick, the scope creeps outward.
And the chart is instantly wrong.
Instantly. It demands continuous, often really time-consuming updates to stay accurate. And if you stop updating it, it's not just unhelpful, it's actively dangerous. It's giving you a false sense of certainty.
That's a good point. And the final disadvantage?
It's just oversimplification. The Gantt chart is built for linear progression. Task A finishes, then task B begins. It struggles badly with projects that are dynamic or uncertain.
Like creative work.
Well.
Or R&D.
Exactly. Creative processes, pure research, projects with fluid deadlines, forcing those kinds of non-linear things onto a rigid, sequential Gantt chart can actually stifle the flexibility and iteration that you need for them to succeed.
Okay, so let's try to synthesize this. We've established Gantt charts are powerful, they're elegant for communicating and tracking linear, predictable projects.
They are fantastic at telling you when things should happen.
But their value just plummets when the sheer number of tasks makes them unreadable, or when the project itself is just too nonlinear.
Right. They're designed for structured outcomes, not for exploratory processes.
So what does all this mean for you, the listener? I think understanding those six steps shows that good project management isn't just about drawing lines after you start. It's about meticulously calculating your dependencies and your duration up front. You have to define your constraints before you even lift a finger.
That's the real discipline.
It is. But let's circle back to that huge limitation we talked about. The chart gives us a perfect timeline, the when, but it totally ignores the difficulty, the how hard, and the resource needs.
It's biggest blind
spot. And this raises, I think, a really important question. If the Gantt chart gives us that perfect timeline, the schedule, what complementary tool is absolutely necessary to manage the resource burn rate, the cost, and to prevent the team burnout that the Gantt chart simply cannot see?
That's a great question.
That's the challenge for you to think about. We do have some supplementary material for this deep dive, including a great video link that walks you through building one of these. It's all waiting for you in the show notes.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for joining us for another deep dive. We'll catch you next time.